Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. We've got some great questions, but I wanted to say first off, if you guys haven't seen my recent podcast or videos this last week posted about the Reason Rally, I would love for you guys to check those things out. It was a great experience. Had a lot of fun last week going to that. And I know that there's been some very valid criticism online about some aspects of the Reason Rally and whatnot. We talk about that a little bit in the podcast. And also some new and expanded direction that my show, or my channel rather, is taking that I also would like you guys to know about. So that's that was posted this last Thursday, so you can check that out on my channel, so please do so. And now let's get on with your questions. Bibin Bay. I have exteriorized once or twice, but it was long before I heard of Scientology. It is a sensation very different from dreaming or making things up. After being introduced to Scientology, I have gone backtrack to earlier lives in basic auditing at least once, which also is not the same as dreaming. Have you ever exteriorized and have you gone backtrack to earlier lives? Or is this part of what you refer to as nonsense? Well, bluntly, yeah, that is what I refer to as nonsense. But here's the thing about it, right? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you didn't experience what you experienced or that, you know, and how you interpret that experience is up to you. It's your subjective experience. So, you know, but to tell me that you separated from your body as a spiritual entity and were, you know, able to fly around or look around or do whatever it was that you did, or that you have back history, you know, historical memories from before this lifetime, I'm not going to accept that as true just because you say it. And this is, and you have to understand that I'm not saying that you're lying. I'm not saying that what happened to you didn't happen. But I'm telling you that you're going to have to provide me with more substantive information or evidence before I'm going to believe that interpretation of your experience. Your experience might not have felt to you like a dream or a fantasy or an idea that you had, but it's the only way I can look at it until I see something that satisfies my disbelief in that experience, right? And that's, so again, there's no name calling here or labeling, but yeah, I would say that that's not something that I'm going to accept as true just because you say it happened, right? And just, you know, to throw this out there, in terms of critical thinking and in terms of skepticism, evidence is important. And when it comes to, you know, like a court of law or the law, eyewitnesses are given a lot of credence. Their eyewitness testimony is given a lot of importance, and you know, juries pay a lot of attention to people. But the fact of the matter is that when it comes to science and scientific studies and sociological studies of eyewitness testimony, it is horrifically unreliable. People hardly ever remember things that happened correctly. You know, you can take a video, you can test this anytime you want, you know. You go back and look at old diary entries and you are reminded of things you'd forgotten all about or remembered wrong and this sort of thing. You go back and look at, you know, old pictures, you look at old videotapes and you know, I didn't remember it that way at all, you know. Well, that's your memory, right? Memory is tricky. Memory is an amazingly deceptive and horribly unreliable. So, and I'm talking about just from an objective scientific point of view. So I have good reason to doubt the validity of somebody's fantastic or extraordinary claims when it comes to things like spiritual experiences or past life memories. You're gonna have to go actually get some evidence that's gonna show that claim is valid. And that's why I would use words like, you know, nonsense, or, you know, I highly doubt, or it's very suspicious, or that sort of thing. That's why, right? Because it is. And it's on the, you know, the burden of proof when you're going to make a claim like that is on you. It's not on me. I don't have to go out of my way to find evidence to prove your claim. You're the one who has to do that. So I'm not, you know, so again, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt by saying to you, I'm not saying you're malicious or mean or you know, doing this out of some, you know, knowing that it's a knowing fabrication on your part. I'm just saying that I don't have any reason to believe you. So that's my answer to that question. Lori Louie, I'm a huge fan of your videos and appreciate them so much I became a Patreon supporter. It was so easy. You're doing a great job and I'm happy to contribute so you can continue educating all of us. I was initially drawn to your work because of my fascination with Scientology. However, I have benefited so much more because you have introduced critical thinking skills into my life. It has prompted a shift in my approach to many things. Thank you. Now, my question. When I was young, I thought Christian Science and Scientology were the same thing. I just thought the term Scientologist was what parishioners of Christian Science were called, but I now realize that's not the case. While learning about the different tenets of each, I was struck by Mary Baker Eddy's theory of malicious animal magnetism. A malicious person can transmit something harmful or damaging onto another person by thought. And Hubbard's belief that a PTSSP can draw physical harm onto a Scientologist individually or the group as a whole. I understand Christian Science was at its height of popularity in the 40s. Do you think Hubbard, who liked to repackage ideas and claim them as his own, was influenced by Mary Baker Eddy? Well, most certainly he was, and also by other earlier spiritualists and mentalists and I think Madame Blavatsky was somebody who was an early 1900s or late 1800s source of information that influenced a whole lot of New Age spirituality and gurus and whatnot from the 20th century almost uniformly are plagiarizing Madame Blavatsky. And the funny thing is that Madame Blavatsky was shamelessly plagiarizing lots of earlier people. We did a whole podcast on this with Joe Zimhart, my Sensibly Speaking podcast, where we talked about this in detail. Joe was just a font of information on this kind of thing. And so that's pretty much a given. And Hubbard was pretty shameless in his plagiarizing. And I think I've mentioned before, the way that he would do that is he would take the information and then he would say, well, yeah, they said that, but they got it all wrong because they put the wrong importances. You know, they said A, B, and C, and we just took out B because that was the really important part about what they said. And they got A and C. That was all wrong. It was only B that was really important, right? And he's just flat out saying, yeah, I ripped them off. I mean, that's really what he's saying. But he's just getting away with it because people who follow L. Ron Hubbard and think that his brand of spirituality is the truth are compelled to believe what he has to say about it because he's, you know, he's the source of it, and they have a confirmation bias. They want to believe what he's saying for whatever reason. So as far as the Christian Science thing goes, when I was in Scientology, we never thought there was any connection at all. I didn't really know much about Mary Baker Eddy. I didn't know much about Christian Science. I still don't really. But I do know that Hubbard was drawing on a lot of information from Freud, from Jung, from early psychoanalysis, from early spiritual practices, from Aleister Crowley's work. There's all kinds of borrowings of things and influences that went into Scientology. So I can't make causal direct connections between Scientology and Christian Science, but I will say that it doesn't, you know, no leap of logic for me to see that there's a connection there. Eck Dubell, I had a question about the whole war on psychs thing. I know Scientologists believe that psychiatry and psychiatrists are evil and suppressive, and that for millions of years they have been oppressing the freedom of beings all across the galaxy. Psychiatry is blamed for causing strife, misery, and mental slavery throughout this world and countless others. The church has been very vocal about its condemnation of psychiatry, with Tom Cruise publicly going off on psychiatric drugs and the church's official campaign against Prop 63, the Mental Health Services Act. Their Industry of Death Museum, and I use that word loosely, even hands out disturbing brochures with titles like Psychiatric Rape, talking about how psychiatrists need to be stopped before it's too late. With that in mind, are you aware of individual Scientologists that have taken any sort of extreme action against members of the psychiatric community? I didn't know if that sort of violent fundamentalist extremism was present in Scientology, but I would be surprised if all the hate speech spewed by the CCHR, Miscavige, and Hubbard himself didn't end up pushing some true believer over the edge. Well, here's what I can say about that. I don't have direct eyewitness knowledge. I didn't see anybody ever physically assault a psychiatrist or break the law in regards to psychiatry or anything like that. I just saw protests. I saw lots and lots and lots of protests. And of course, at the events where Miscavige or earlier international Scientology executives would stand on stage and talk to us about how they had introduced legal, you know, like bills and laws and whatnot to stop psychiatry, how Scientology was responsible for closing mental hospitals around the country, how Scientology was directly responsible or indirectly responsible for getting psychiatrists legally prosecuted and even put into jail for, having broken the law and that sort of thing, right? So that was the sort of thing that was talked about to us most of the time. It was get them legally, get them on legal grounds, because it's assumed in Scientology that if you're a psychiatrist, you're breaking the law. You know, you're a bad, evil, horrible person, and there's things you're up to that are, you know, shameful and horrible, and it's just assumed that that's the case, right? 100% across the boards, there's no such thing as a good psych. The only good psych is a dead psych, you know, this kind of thing, right? But I heard one time of a story where a guy who, a woman, a Scientologist, related to me that her husband had broken into a psychiatrist's office and had gotten the goods on the guy, right? And confronted him, and he was, you know, and he was like a big guy, and she was bragging about the fact that he was this big bear-like man who had physically intimidated a psychiatrist and had gotten the goods on the guy by breaking into his office, because that was the only way that they could somehow get the goods on the guy, because they couldn't find any dirt on him through any other channel, right? And she didn't go into lots and lots of detail about this. This was just sort of one of these, like, you know, sort of, it doesn't really have any validity of any kind other than she related it to me, and maybe it happened and maybe it didn't. But I think she referred to her ex-husband as Bear. You know, he's like this big guy, you know. So this was a big point of pride that they had gone in and busted this psychiatrist's heads, you know, and he liked to go in there and bust heads, you know. This is how she put it. And of course, at the time, you know, I thought that was perfectly acceptable behavior, because I thought psychs were evil and must be destroyed, right? Generally speaking, though, Scientology does not incite violence. I never really got that when I was in Scientology, and the exceptions to it are very, very rare, very, very infrequent. Even with protesters and whatnot, when things got really stressful in 2008, when Anonymous, really came to the forefront, and there were just these massive protests. The stress level was quite high during that time, and there were individual Scientologists who went after protesters, right? I remember one guy in Orange County who was hitting them, you know, and And the church internally, like, kicked him out. They were like, yeah, no, dude, that's like, it's, you know, like, don't do that, right? Because they didn't want the protesters to have the legal upper hand on Scientology, right? Or have the moral high ground. And so they very, very, very heavily were discouraging anything like that. Scientology's illegal activities when it comes to getting their enemies are always done under the cloak of darkness and in the shadows. And they're kind of bullies that way. And I've said that before, where they do it where you can't see it. They do it where they're not going to get caught, right? And, you know, the whole, you know, Snow White program in the 70s was sort of the epitome of that, you know, a whole undercover operation sort of thing. So that's how they tend to do things, more so than be physically, you know, imposing or openly violent. That's not generally Scientology's way. Don Miguel, in an earlier Q&A, you discussed the possibility of the feds raiding Scientology, and you pointed out that in order for that to happen, the feds had to have evidence of criminal activity. While this is certainly correct, I thought you slid past the rather important issue of just what criminal activity the church is involved in. I'm curious what you think the crimes of Scientology might be, not just unethical, immoral, or torturous activity. Seems to me that the church is fairly careful not to cross legal lines, and as long as it enjoys protected status as a church, it can engage in all kinds of activities that aren't necessarily illegal. Well, you are absolutely right. The church does engage in all kinds of immoral activities that are not necessarily illegal, even though they're clearly wrong, and anyone with a conscience wouldn't go anywhere near what some of the Church of Scientology does, and they justify it with First Amendment protections. That doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make it always legal either. Now, I didn't go look up online a whole bunch of laws that the Church of Scientology could be found guilty of violating, but they do exist. I mean, for one, David Miscavige is personally responsible for assault and battery. That's illegal, right? You don't get to go running around hitting people. And I was assaulted when I was in the church, so I do have direct knowledge of this. This did happen. Now, you know, the statute of limitations runs out. You don't have the ability to go back and prosecute it, but that doesn't make it any less of a crime. I also have personal knowledge of violation of child labor laws, right? Children are only supposed to work X number of hours a day. Church Scientology and the Sea Organization specifically could care less about WOG law. And they had children working all hours of the day and night, and that was not an issue, nor did they have children being properly schooled. This goes back to the 70s and the 80s, when they really didn't care. I mean, nobody had anything to say internally in the church trying to deal with these kids. And so there's literally a whole generation of Sea Org children who are now grown up who were horribly mistreated. And there are definitely legal violations there, which the church, once it came out and once it became known that this was going on, because the consequences of leaving a whole generation of these kids basically screwed over and left to drift like driftwood, that's going to get out. Word of that got out. And then the church clamped down on enforcing child labor laws internally, right? Up until the 1990s, they didn't really care about child labor laws like at all. It didn't even matter. So there are violations there. There's also human rights violations, right? They cloak a lot of their illegal activities under the First Amendment practices, and unfortunately they get away with it. I don't know that it makes it any less illegal. It's just a sort of a legal loophole called the First Amendment. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, it wouldn't be legal for Hewlett-Packard to do what they do with their workforce, but somehow it's legal for the Church of Scientology. I think there's a huge double standard there. And so I'll call that illegal activity in terms of how the Sea Organization specifically handles its workforce, right? And the abuses are, I mean, there's a laundry list of abuses with this. So I think that there's criminal activity there. as well, right? And then you, and then now we're not even touching what the Church of Scientology did as an entity to get tax exemption. Because as I documented in my book, and as has been documented elsewhere, they lied through their teeth to the IRS. And they are, every single day of their existence, the Church of Scientology is violating tax law by violating their 501c3 tax-exempt status. David Miscavige, without question, is being personally benefiting from Scientology, right? That's called inurement. It's illegal. That's happening. So, you know, so there's corporate law or the tax law rather that I think also could be very seriously looked into, and I think that you would find good cause for legal charges, legal prosecution to be brought against Scientology on that basis. Problem is that it takes a lot of work and evidence gathering to prove this kind of thing. And so I can sit here and I can talk about it, and say that I've seen it, and say that I experienced it, and say that these things happened. But the evidence gathering process of proving those things is difficult. And when you have the amount of money that the Church of Scientology has and how much it's willing to throw at legal defense, you then extend a prosecution for crimes like I've been talking about out to years and years and years of work. And you're talking about taxpayer dollars to prosecute these crimes. And so the FBI and other federal and state agencies look at that, and they look at the, you know, cost-benefit ratio, basically, and, you know, and decide, no, we're not going to go after that because there are other easier cases we can prosecute that won't fight back anywhere near as hard as the Church of Scientology will. And that's just a fact of life. It doesn't make it right, doesn't make it moral, but it is a fact of life. So that is one of the things that when people ask me all the time, why doesn't the federal government do something about this? Why are they still getting away with this kind of thing? That's why. In addition to the fact I've also said that they have high-level connections at Washington that tend to put the kibosh on these kind of investigations before they can get too far along or get too serious. That's happened. So all of this together doesn't make for a pretty picture, but it is the reality of dealing with the Church of Scientology through legal channels, which is why I don't think that the solution to dealing with Scientology is legal prosecution. It would be great if the Church of Scientology would be investigated by the IRS and have their tax-exempt status revoked. That would be wonderful. I don't see it happening, but it, you know, because of the amount of push it would take to make that happen. But, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't think that it particularly needs to happen in order to depower Scientology, because that depowering process has been going on for years, both internally within Scientology through David Miscavige's completely inept and incompetent actions and running his organization, and through the actions of critics and Anonymous and now the media. I mean, you know, who's joining Scientology now? And who's going to? And 10 years from now, what is Scientology going to be? You know, it's just, it's taking care of itself in a way. And that's one of the reasons why I also have some more, you know, things to talk about with it. But also feel like, you know, there's a reason to be a Scientology critic. There's a reason to be outspoken about this and keep talking about it. But there's also the reality of the fact that they're flushing themselves down the toilet so fast right now that it's almost kind of like, okay, let's just kind of sit back and watch this happen now. You know, that's kind of my current attitude about it. If something happens to change that idea, I'll let you know. But that's kind of how I look at it right now. So there you go. Hey, it's time for Flash Answers. Elizabeth Levitt. If a person gets someone into the cult, gets a payment for that recruit, when that person then gets people into the cult, does that original person also get a payment for those his recruit brings in? No, it's not a pyramid scheme that way. If Joe Public brings in Sally Sue, He gets paid for as long as Sally Sue is doing services. Now, if Sally Sue brings in her friend Jane, Joe Public, the original guy, does not get any money for Jane. Sally Sue is the one who gets commissions for Jane. And that's, so it's sort of a, that's kind of how that works. Blackhawk, which religious beliefs do you find the funniest? Honestly, I don't pick out any specific one as funnier than others. I think they're all kind of amusing and silly. Silly in that they're fanciful. They're so improbable to me at this point that I just, you know, I can't really grant a whole lot of credence to any of them. But that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, respect the fact that other people can have those beliefs. Just don't ask me to believe them because I can't go there. They're all too silly for me. SH3P. I love your Q&A, Chris. Keep up the great work. I have a question for you. In Q&A number 59, you briefly discussed your prior auditing experiences experiencing the past life of a Scientologist. Shortly after, you added that they would have dug up the past auditing record of the person claiming to be cleared OT8. I assume they would have done that regardless of the OT level. My question is, did they do this to you? And if they did, where did you get the name of the prior Scientologist who was on the ship with Hubbard? Yeah, I just made up the name. You know, I was asked, what name were you? And I said, oh, well, I was blah, 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 right? And then they actually did do a search for folders, for pre-clear folders, PC folders, under that name. And guess what? They couldn't find any. Surprise! No such auditing folders ever under that name. Oh, well. Rob Day. Chris, do you miss anything or anyone regarding Scientology? Honestly, yeah. I miss my friends. I miss the people I used to know because they were mostly very good people. I certainly miss some of the people that I used to know and love who were in, which is one of the, you know, one of the reasons why I've been an activist is hopefully someday they'll get out too and I'll be able to reconnect with some of them. But there isn't anything about Scientology I miss. Not in the slightest. Just the people. Okay, and so we've come to the end of another episode of Critical Q&A. Thank you very much for coming around and watching. I really hope my answers were interesting and educational for you. And I hope that if you're getting anything out of my show or out of my channel in general, that you will consider throwing some love and support my way, either through my Patreon campaign or just using the donate button or however you want to go about doing it. It is you guys who enable me to keep doing this work, and I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you coming around and giving me all of your comments and feedback, whether it's constructive criticism or positive feedback. Just keep it coming, and all of your questions are being kept track of, and I will get to them as time goes on here, so keep putting them in the comments section below. Thanks a lot for watching, and I'll see you guys next week.